Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
Well, running shoes. Once upon a time, of course, they were the domain of athletes and would-be Olympians. They've become de rigueur footwear now, haven't they? Everyone wears them, whether they go running or not, and not just at the gym. Technology's helped transform running shoes over the years, and it means no matter what shape or size your feet are, you can pretty much find something to help you pound the pavement in relative comfort. Or for most people, I think they just really hope that they look good, don't they? Podiatrist Peter Lum is here to talk to us about running shoes. He can also talk about ingrown toenails and all things foot-related, as you know. He's a Sydney-based podiatrist, also a member of the Sports Medicine Australia and the Australian Podiatry Association, and I bet he owns a pair of runners as well. Peter, good
just
evening.
Just a few.
You'd have a heap.
How are you?
You'd probably get stacks of them on approval, don't you?
Not as good as what
come
they
on,
used
you're,
to
Come on, you're in the seat of all those freebies from the industry.
A lot of my mates are in the building industry and they get to build their houses for free. We get shoes for free. No.
I don't think that happens either.
Actually. No, I know. 100%. 100%. Mm. But I love the whale sharks. I'm going to be swinging with the orangutans in Sabah in 3 weeks.
No, you're not. Leave them alone.
I know. We're taking the kids to a little place near Kota Kinabalu.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, so that'll be something.
Why don't you just leave the orangutans alone?
Well, we'll maybe.
You probably meet enough orangutans in your own profession.
No comment.
I withdraw that comment.
Yes. No, we...
Very improper slur on your fellow
very, very true.
Fellow
very
podiatrist.
True. Yes. Shall we digress?
Well, that's very good.
Yes.
You're not actually going to swing in the trees.
No. We're going somewhere and nearby there's a conservation area for the orangutan. So okay. My kids are into their animal protection, so we'll go and have a look.
I was walking past the shop. We better talk about trainers.
We should.
I was walking past. I'm happy to talk about orangutans. They don't need runners.
No, they don't. No.
And actually, there's a point here, isn't there? We never once had runners either.
No.
So we've always runners.
And our feet used to look like their hands.
Did they?
They did. Yep.
Oh, really?
There was a way that we used to grab.
What,
grab
a couple of hundred thousand years ago? Homo
maybe
sapiens.
A couple of million years ago. Yeah.
Oh, before the Homo sapiens probably fully emerged.
This is right, yeah. We were up in trees, gliding from one branch to another.
Well, you were. I was watching TV. Well, I was walking past a shop window the other day.
Yep.
And you know how, well, trainers, sneakers, what one generation of Australians would have called sand shoes.
Yes, definitely. And some still do.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
There was just, this is all the shop sold, and there was a wall of about, I don't know, 300 of them, different types of running shoes, most of which I thought were just probably appeals to fashion, aren't they?
Yep.
Is there any difference between your average sneaker and a running shoe?
Huge difference. And if you're a young tacker or a younger tacker, you'd go in and buy the first ones and put them on your own eBay store and double your money. Apparently that's the thing to do now.
Yeah, see, I don't get that. But anyway,
for
Darren called and he's wondering the same. But what is the difference between sneakers, joggers, runners? Are they all the same?
Well, the thing that's hitting the shelves now are casual running shoes, and this hit home. So for those who are in Sydney at the moment, on Saturday we had a glorious day.
Mm.
So we toddled down to the park and sat in the park while the kids played, and for about 2 hours, we just sat there and enjoyed the sun. And I reckon half the people that ran or walked past, these weren't just people on the casual walk, they were doing their exercise, run or walk, were wearing shoes that were just wrong. They were just so wrong for themselves. But
you can't stop working, can you?
No, I can't. But they looked like running shoes. They looked like a regular pair of running shoes.
How would you be able to tell the difference?
Well, because I know the models, I can tell, but you can look at somebody when they're running in a shoe that's not right for them or walking in a shoe that's just not designed for what they're doing. You can see the shock coming up through their legs. You can see their foot moving all over the place. You can see their knees deviating as they run or as they walk. And I just felt like tapping people on the shoulder and saying, you know, you could get so much more comfortable, just different shoes.
Before we grew up,
yes.
As kids, we could run around in bare feet.
Absolutely.
You don't damage your feet by running around in bare feet.
No, definitely not.
So why do we need running shoes at all?
If everyone's got ideal mechanics, go for it. But unfortunately, we all don't. You know, we all get older and our knees deviate and our joints get arthritic and we lose our fatty cushioning underneath the soles of our feet and we just need that protection from the concrete jungle. which is not in Sabah.
No,
we're in Sydney.
Let's get back to so anyway, you were noticing that a lot of them are unsuitable. So
yes,
tell me, what is the difference between, you know, a trainer, a sneaker, a jogger, a runner?
Well, you've got running shoes. You've got structured technical running shoes, and these are shoes that are designed for different foot types, different mileages, different intensities, weight, body weight, that sort of thing. And there's a lot of science and technology that go into them. And then you've got this range of shoes that are sort of like athleisure or sneakers, if you want to put it that way. They look like the running shoe, but they've got no technology. They're just a foot covering.
Hmm.
Perfect shoes for wearing casually, you know, out to dinner, jeans, whatever, but they're not that good to run your hour run around the bay, if you know what I mean. So they just
when
don't have the
structure. When I was a runner a while back, I haven't run for a bit because my knees got dodgy, but I must say I did invest it once in a proper pair of running shoes.
Yep.
They did feel better.
Yes, they do.
You know that years ago, though, people would just wear, say, I mean, we don't like to use brand names here on the ABC, but for the purposes of illustrating it, a very famous Australian sand shoe would be the Dunlop Volley.
The Dunlop Volleys, yes.
Dunlop Volley.
Yes.
Which people used to play tennis in.
Yes, very much so. And the original herringbone sole.
And quite successfully.
Yes.
Did they?
Oh, absolutely.
Anything wrong with that?
Well, they were designed for the purpose. So they were designed to grip hold of a flat surface tennis court.
Yeah.
With no regard to what they were doing to the foot, but they achieved that purpose. And they're still used now in the building industry. Roofers still wear them.
Roof tilers like them,
because they get a lot of contact with the roof.
Yeah.
But again, they've got no regard to influencing the foot in a better way. So they achieved the purpose in the fact that they helped the athlete perform better on that surface. But
you wouldn't suggest running in them?
Definitely not. No.
Why not?
Not if your foot type's anywhere outside the normal foot type. So if you've got a normal foot type, good mechanics, you've got good structure, good technique, you could run in a pair of thongs.
Yeah.
And that's been shown and proven. But not many of us fit that little tiny box. And that's where our profession comes into it, and physios and chiropractors, because there's a lot of us that don't fit into that little box anymore.
Yeah, but presumably everyone's foot is a bit different, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And anyone in the medical field will tell you that normal does not exist.
No.
We have ideal, and then you have small variations away from that ideal. And once you get further and further and further away, you need more specialized footwear and treatments. And
so just if you're not actually running as such and, you know, doing hardcore running.
Yep.
Your ordinary sneaker, your flat-soled sneaker.
Yep.
That's fashionable.
For loafing around, absolutely. Yeah, casual walking, that sort of stuff.
Fine.
Yeah, but if you're going to go even pace walking, you know, if you're going to have your headphones on and exercise and build up a sweat, you still need a decent shoe because you've got, there's evidence to say that when you run, I think it's like 4 or 5 times your body weight in force comes through your feet and your legs.
Mm-hmm.
When you walk at pace, it's like 2 to 3 times. Mm-hmm. So there's still a lot of force coming through your mechanics of your foot that they've got to deal with. So
yeah, although your body's designed for this, isn't
absolutely
it? We've
yeah.
been walking for, you know,
absolutely
hundreds of thousands.
But then if we put it into a situation where bad mechanics are magnified by wearing shoes that are either decayed or just not appropriate, then anything that's going to manipulate an injury will manipulate it much quicker and much sooner.
So what's a good pair of running shoes then?
One that fits your foot, not too tight, not too big, and ideally one that suits your mechanics of your foot. So people with high arches need a completely different shoe to someone with a very flat foot, for instance.
So, what's a flat foot anyway?
Well, that's a very good question. So mechanics versus position. So someone who just comes in with just a very flat foot, that foot type might be perfectly fine for them. We see a lot of people with Asian descent, you know, they're designed, well, they're not designed, but they naturally have a flatter foot than other races. Whereas other people, you know, you might have a normal looking foot, but when they start to walk, there's lots of movement. So then that arch actually flattens out as they function. And that generally is the worst situation than just having a foot that's normally flat, if that makes sense.
So does it make any difference to whether you can run well or not if you've got a flatter foot?
I used to be a runner. I've seen a lot of runners, and I've seen very high arch running feet. Yeah. I've seen very flat running feet.
Doesn't make a difference.
Doesn't make a difference. I've seen either end.
Yeah.
Flatter feet help swimming. I've seen that. Ian Thorpe used to have, you know, surfboards as feet, big flat planks that, you know.
Obviously, so if you, I mean, a lot of people like to go to the gym,
yep,
and then they would, you know, do a gym workout. In that sense, does it matter in the gym what you're wearing?
If you're going to be running on the treadmill, for instance, absolutely. But if you're lifting weights, riding bikes, that sort of stuff, not as much.
Right.
Whereas if you're going to go pound the pavement, absolutely.
And if you're running on the treadmill.
If you're running on the treadmill, yeah. It mimics running out on the road. There's slight variations in the mechanics. But, yeah, that sort of heel-toe gait pattern, or, you know, that lineal repetitive load, you know, that's what our footwear is designed to.
You know how the lots of them have very kind of thick cushion soles?
Yep.
Why do we need that, though? Because after all, our feet are
naturally cushioned.
There's a lot of bones in the feet. I mean, the forces are distributed
absolutely
quite efficiently.
And through the fatty pads and that sort of stuff. So the idea of the big thickened cushion sole on the outset, you would assume, would be to condition the forces so that the forces don't come up through the foot. But it's actually to create an unstable base a lot of the time. So then that forces your muscles to work harder.
Oh, okay.
So that's where that mechanism. So basically sitting on a soft pillow or cloud of air makes your foot more unstable, makes everything work harder. So that's where that theory comes from.
So a thick, soft
sole, yeah, makes your foot work harder.
Is not a good thing to walk or run in.
No, if you've got a foot type that's prone to overuse injuries and you put in that situation, you'll get injured. If you've got a good foot type, it exercises the muscles. Yeah.
So, all right. So the thing should fit you.
Fit you.
So some shoes are better for high arches, some are better for
flat foot, yep, definitely. And not only in what's constructed, but how they fit, but it also should be designed for what you're doing. So, for instance, the best example is wearing netball or tennis shoes that are designed for stop, start, changing directions. Probably not the best shoes to run repetitively, you know, for 5, 10, 15 kilometres, because there's just not enough flexibility in the sole.
Is that right?
Yeah, they're designed quite differently.
So I was watching the Matildas game with the Women's World Cup. I mean, you think that they run a lot.
They do run a lot.
But there are also lots of stop-start there too.
Yep, well, the boots are designed for that. And this is interesting. This week we've had lots of injuries come in from all the new AstroTurf fields.
Oh, okay.
Through Sydney with all the drought and everything, all the local fields are getting replaced with hard AstroTurf.
With plastic, with fake turf.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's all being laid on top of road base. So it's like the guys are playing on concrete. Guys and girls are playing on concrete.
Yeah.
So the boots, unfortunately, aren't matching up, because a lot of the boot manufacturers make their boots for Europe and overseas where the grounds are much softer, and they're coming in here and we're getting a lot of impact injuries.
Yeah, I mentioned barefoot running. I mean, some people do run in bare feet.
Yeah.
But of course there's always the risk of injury because of, you know, the stuff that's
on the ground.
I mean, you know, stones and glass and all that. But there has been a bit of a trend, hasn't there, for those barefoot running shoes that you put them on. They're like oversized socks, toe socks, and they simulate.
Or the natural motion or the trying to replicate.
Are they good for you or not?
It comes back to normal and ideal. So I don't want to harp on it, but if you've got good foot mechanics, you can run in thongs. You can run in pretty much anything. It's when you deviate from that there. So time and a place, you know, they're sorts of shoes that you've got to adapt to. You've got to be prepared to put in the time to get used to them. It's not something you can go straight into, definitely.
Oh, when I was running, one of my other thoughts when I was running was was that the shoe industry was a rip-off because, with all due respect, the shoes used to cost a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. I
mean, so your top-grade running shoe, you know, costs well over $100.
Yeah, definitely. These days
probably cost more.
Well, when I first started in the industry, 20 years ago, the shoes were more expensive than what they are now. They haven't, you know, with inflation, they're actually roughly about the same as what they were 20 years ago.
Yeah. Is there any reason for that? Or?
Well, we're victims of distance and population, unfortunately. You know, a lot of the brands are based overseas. They make their shoes overseas, so they've got to get the shoes here. And unfortunately, you know, there's only 25 million of us, which is about the size of a big city in the US. So we've got lots of retailers that have, you know, our retail space is very expensive. Getting the shoes here, it's just all cost on top of cost on top of cost. So It all feeds back there, and then at the end of the day, you've got to pay for the tech, you know, the research that goes into making the product, and there's a lot of research that goes into them.
Peter Lum is with me. He's a podiatrist, of course, well known to people to the Nightlife family. He's here in the studio. If you'd like to ask him a question about, well, we're talking a bit about running shoes, but any aspect of feet and foot and foot health, give him a call. 1-300-800-222 is the number. 1-300-800-222 on text 0467-922-702 if you'd like to grab a line. Question for the podiatrist. I've seen ads on social media for these straps you wear on your toes to realign them or to supposedly help your posture. Do these work?
Ooh.
Rain from Blacktown.
Oh, this is a very tricky situation. Look, we don't know. So it's a new product. We don't know how long changes are going to take or whether they're actually going to be long lasting. Mm. There is absolutely no doubt that, you know, in a clinical situation, we will tape whether it's the foot or the ankle, the knee, the hip, the shoulder. We use tape all the time. We use strapping all the time to realign, take structures, you know, put them in different places to alleviate pain. Absolutely. Whether you have any long-term anatomical change by doing it repeatedly over a long period of time remains to be seen. Mm-hmm. One of the tricks that we see, particularly when people have got bunions and they try splinting or taping it or pulling it back into alignment, the bunions, where the big toe changes its direction, sometimes you can actually trigger off the reflexes of the joint or the muscles that control the joint to hold on even tighter. Mm-hmm. So you stop the taping and the big toe can actually deviate further. So it is a bit of a tricky one, and unfortunately we just don't have the science behind it at the moment to know what the long-term effects of some of these strappings. So The bottom line is, if you're in pain, if you're getting grief and something helps you get out of pain, then it's probably a good thing. So there's no harm in trying. Just be mindful that if you notice things get worse, then probably get some advice on it.
Okay. All right. Peter wants a question about running. Hello, Peter.
And you know, Phil, apologies for my voice. I've got the flu.
No, that's all right, mate.
Good. You sound loud and clear to me.
Yeah, perfect. I want to know, I wear orthotics.
Yep.
I want to know, do I wear my orthotics in my running shoes?
Have they been constructed with your running shoes in mind?
No.
No. So if you do wish to wear them in there, I would go back to whoever made your orthotics and just double check that the prescription matches up with the footwear that you've got, because if you put an orthotic into a shoe that's already quite controlling, you can over-control your foot, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It also comes down to horses and courses. So I was a distance runner, wore orthotics, but I never put my orthotics in my racing shoes. I used to wear them to training, but not racing. So that was just something that I preferred. Kept me out of pain. There was no dramas. So I'd have the discussion with your clinician as to what your condition is, why you've got your orthotics, and work out whether you do need them in your runners or not, and make sure that the prescription matches up. So,
cool.
That's
where
we go. No worries, Pete.
All right, Pete. Raylene, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
With bunions as well.
Yep.
I've got a very small, minor, nothing sort of bunion, but I reflect on my grandmother's feet,
yep,
which were atrocious.
Yep.
And I don't want to go down that path.
And you're seeing the future in front of you.
Yeah, I have, and it's ugly. So and I don't want to go there.
Yep, sure.
So what do I do? Look for surgery?
No, don't panic. You'll
okay.
be fine. So essentially a bunion is a form of arthritic joint change in that big toe joint where your big toe connects onto the foot. So your grandmother's generation was very different to ours. So their footwear was very different.
Right.
So that was one thing. So
she was still wearing heels into her 80s.
So, yeah. So the higher the heel height, the more narrow the shoe, angled, all that sort of thing, the more risk of creating the bunion. So what you do is inherit your foot type, if you like, and then it's what you do with it after that. If you put it in very tight, ill-fitting shoes, you're probably going to develop a bunion.
Right.
So the best thing that you can do is alternate your heel height if you have to wear heels for work. Make sure your shoes fit properly. The other thing that you can do is mobilize the joint. So it's, you know, nothing too tricky. You just move your big toe around its normal range of motion, up and down, side to side, round and round. That keeps the joint mobile, keeps it lubricated and loose, so the risk of joint damage gets reduced with that.
Right.
Surgeries nowadays are quite successful, but they're not looked at unless you're getting pain enough to stop you from doing your activities. So
Okay. So
just keep an eye on it. If you feel that the big toe is deviating, go and get it checked out sooner than later, and we can look at whether orthotics are a solution. Make sure your shoes are okay. But
I'm not sure about investing in my shoes because I have a occupation that stands all day.
Yep.
So I wear good quality shoes and I change them frequently.
Yep.
I just noticed it as sort of,
Yep. So unfortunately, back in your grandmother's day, you know, that sort of wasn't the approach, you know, the shoes weren't.
Stilettos. Yeah. Yeah, no, not going down that path.
All right, terrific.
Okay, cheers,
Raylene. Thanks, Raylene. Bye. 1-300-800-222 is the number. There are some lines free if you want to grab one. 1-300-800-222. Text 0467922702. We're talking with Peter Lum. He's a podiatrist in the studio and can answer your questions. We're talking a bit about running shoes, but any questions about foot health, Pete, I know, would take it on. Cord says it's an easy solution to all these things. Don't run.
Don't run.
Graham says, by the way, Phil and guests, Dunlop volleys were great when I did fencing as a sport.
Fencing, yeah, very true. Keep you nimble.
So there you are. All right, 1-300-800-222 is the number.
Nightlife with Philip Clark on ABC Radio.
Yes, let's get to Gina. Hello, Gina.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about the arches.
Yes.
Whether you need, if you've got a high arch or a flat foot, you need to support the arch if you've got a high arch, and hence the muscles around it. You know, which muscles are we trying to support?
Yep.
I just feel it's confusing.
You tell me, because every second person that comes in with a high arch wants a different answer. We'll have one client with a very high arch, and they want an orthotic, or they want a shoe to contact every bit of that arch so that they feel that they're making contact with the ground, if you like. And then the next person will come in with a very high arch, and they don't want anything to touch it because it irritates it, or if the foot moves. So that comes down to a personal. So we're not actually supporting the arch when if someone's got a very high arch. We don't want to support it. It's naturally doing that job itself.
Right. Yeah.
So the tricky thing is when we're looking at dealing with pathology. So if somebody's in pain, and we can attribute that to their foot type. So if someone's got a high arch and it's causing them, say, knee pain or hip pain or whatever, usually we want to influence the foot in a way that it's not able to do it itself. So with a high arch, the cushioning capabilities of the joint's natural motion that Phil was talking about before is lost.
Yes.
So that's when we look at instigating treatments that provide that cushioning. So it might be a more softer, more accommodating orthotic than something that's, say, more rigid or more controlling. So essentially, we have all the tools in our own feet to do anything that we want to, but often they just need the help to do the thing that they're not able to do. So the opposite is with a foot that's really flat or moving a lot, it's absorbing too much force and creating too much movement. So often it's just about reducing the movement or transferring the movement somewhere else, so then we put something more controlling in. So if does that help?
Yeah, I guess so. I was just wondering which muscles are you trying to build up as opposed to have them cushioned, I guess.
So with a high arch, often they're the foot type that have got all the muscle structure. We don't really want to build anything up because everything's doing its job. It's just about reducing the shock absorbance, introducing greater shock absorbance into the foot type.
Right. Okay. Yes.
Okay, Gina.
No worries.
Thanks, Gina. Thank you. Bye. 1-300-800-222. Chris. Hello.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you, mate?
Very well, thank you. I have, for the last, 20 years, avoided exercise. I've always said that round is still a shape. I'm not out of shape.
You don't want a six-pack, you'd prefer a keg, wouldn't you?
That's right. Always said I'm allergic to exercise, I break out in sweats.
Yep.
Mostly if you lie down, the feeling goes away.
Yeah.
But no, I'm ready to revisit the world of exercise.
Yep.
Good on you.
With my terrible knees, I don't want to run.
Sure.
I'm looking at cycling and a bit of gym work with weights and stuff. But,
yep.
Where can I go to get the right shoe fitted?
There's a very few places. I would suggest before you start any exercise regime like that, get your mechanics checked out. Your local podiatrist or physio will point you in the right direction in terms of what shops are available near you. Obviously, get all your other heart checks and all that sort of stuff sorted with your GP. And, you know, 20 years is a long time out of the game.
Yeah.
If you're in the big city, there's a few, you know, you've got specialized running stores, you've got, you know, places like Athlete's Foot, you've got lots of people where you can get in there and they'll sit down and take your time. But I would recommend getting your anatomy and function checked out first. It doesn't mean getting orthotics. It doesn't mean getting treatment. You just went in. If you went into a clinician and said exactly what you just said then, they'll do a full check. You know, they'll say, hey, Chris, mate, your hamstrings are really tight. So before you go and start exercising on a bike, let's stretch out your hamstrings. Make sure you do these three stretches before you jump on the, you know, that sort of thing is very important. And I can tell you getting out for a game of golf is much easier than getting out for a marathon run. So, you know, avoiding the running is not such a bad thing to get back into it. So, and then the other thing as well, there's a lot of evidence for particularly influencing the effects of diabetes, improving weight loss is to actually do a weight program compared to an aerobic or, you know, cardiovascular system. Yeah. So don't undervalue getting in and doing a weights program to help get you back on the wagon, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I've just started with push-ups.
Yep.
How many can you do, Chris?
I'm up to 31 on first set, and then I add 10 or 15, about five.
Good on you.
Yep. Times a day, yeah.
Yep. Oh, good on you.
Awesome.
Good on you. That's, mate, that's very good.
Never too late to start, so keep it up.
Look, I started with 17 on the first set, now at 31.
Yep.
And just every day. I have Sundays off every day, as many sets as I can.
Yep. Good on you. Yep, perfect.
Someone said to me once, Chris, it doesn't matter what you're doing because anything you're doing is better than doing
doing nothing. Doing nothing, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yep. Well, like I said, I've done nothing for 20 years, so I'm ready to get back into it.
Yep, good stuff. Yeah, but don't undervalue spending some good money on good, proper fitting shoes, and don't settle until you find someone that points in the right direction.
Start with the dog.
Right. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers,
yeah, good on you. Yes, it's true about running shoes, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, your average sneaker shop is really selling
it's just complicated as anything.
They're just selling fashion shoes, and they're not really.
Yep. I mean, we get reps from all the brands come and knock on our doors all the time, and you sit in a half an hour tech session, and they've run through just their brand.
Yeah.
And you come away, you know, with a brain fog, and, you know, let alone you go into a store and there's 20 different brands. 20 different shoes from each brand. It's, you know, it's mind-boggling.
Wally says, we're not trying to advertise Dunlop Volleys. We're really not. But it was my fault because I mentioned it. Yeah, Wally says, I always wear those even when I go for a brisk one-hour walk. I'm 68. Is that a problem?
Is that a problem? Isn't there an ABC show coming up, The Greatest Australian Inventions or something? Something going on like this. So they might be on there.
Is that a problem for Wally?
If he's not getting any pain or symptoms and he's quite comfortable, don't worry about it. Yeah.
Morvan in Esperance says, I was told I shouldn't run if you're over 50. It's too much stress on the body. True or false?
Not proven.
Okay.
Not proven. You know, there's no more stress on it if you're under 50. And, yeah, no, I don't see why that would be more of a drama. So
Mike says, does your weight affect how you run?
I can do, yeah. Your centre of gravity changes. Your balance mechanisms change. And, obviously, if you weigh 100 kilos, there's more force coming through than if you weigh 50 kilos.
Chloe in Epping, I'm a ballroom dancer, and occasionally my feet will hurt after a night of dance in 2.5-inch heels.
Oh!
I'm wondering how much pain is too much, and what kind of pain is a cause for concern, and which is just par for the course.
Par for the course. Yeah, that's a sensational question. So if it's a passion, no pain is enough. look, obviously, if you're exercising, you're working your body and you're in an environment that's causing you grief, then, you know, that's to be expected. You know, if you're running or playing soccer, your muscles are going to get sore. The pain that we worry about is the pain that doesn't go away after a couple of days. So if you're new to an exercise, you're going to get the muscle soreness that lingers around, but that dissipates. The pain that that hangs around after 4, 5, 6, 7 days, or the pain that then starts the minute you start your dancing, that's when we know that something's breaking down or something's inflamed.
Okay. So, right, so if it doesn't go away.
If it doesn't go away.
And it starts immediately when you resume it.
Yep, that's when we want to see it. So
there you go, Chloe.
It's very interesting. One of the first debates you have in a health science is the cost of activity, you know, and it weighs up the cost of all these injuries and expenses compared to sitting on the couch and having heart disease. And it's actually quite a, it's an argument that you don't think you can have, but you end up having it.
Kevin, hello.
Yes, it's a, I'm sure there's a mix up somewhere because I was a professional runner years ago,
yep.
And we got our shoes made specially by, they fit like a glove.
Yes.
They have the number of spikes,
yep.
short or long.
Yep.
And there was a manufacturer, a leather shop in Melbourne.
Yep.
And he was making it for all the professionals,
yep.
as well as all the top amateurs.
Yep.
They would wear
Were these sprinting spikes,
yeah,
Kevin?
Yeah,
so these are sprinting spikes.
Yeah, right. Pieces of art.
Yeah.
And also the thing is that the longer spike would, depending on what the ground was like.
Yep.
But so consequently, people could, all you did was put your foot on a piece of paper and draw around it and take it in, and they would tell you the story, and you could have them delivered in probably 3 weeks to fortnight.
Yep.
But of course, that's quite a long time ago, and things change.
Yes.
So, I'm very sure most of the top amateur runners, and also all those guys that are running and at Stawell and all the other carnivals, they're certainly wearing handmade shoes.
Or pretty close to it, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, fair enough, Kim. Good on you. 1-300-800-222. Amon's got a slightly unusual problem. Hi, Amon.
G'day, guys. How are you?
Good, yeah, mate. Good. Hit it with us. Or hit us with
look.
It.
I've got a myriad of issues with my legs, feet. Nothing debilitating. I've
yep.
been a skateboarder and a paintballer, throughout my life. I've got two different size feet. I'm
yep.
extremely flat foot. I've got two different length legs.
Yep.
And ultimately, when I'm buying shoes, if I could get a size 8 and size 9, that would be great. But
yep.
generally, I've actually had to buy two pairs.
Sure.
And is that right? So what? One foot is one whole shoe size different.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
Wow. So I've got two solutions for you, mate. One you might laugh at, and the other one you're going to cry at.
Right.
So we have a shoe shop next to us, and this was absolutely no premise on my referral, but we had a client who went in, and he was up to I think it was close to two shoe sizes different.
Ouch.
And they actually sold him two pairs of shoes, but they gave the second one to him at cost price. So,
expensive.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, absolutely. But then, you know, like so these shoes were for work. So he's in them, 24 yep. hours a day or, for a decent amount of time. So he's, so he was very grateful for that because now,
The closest it would come to a bargain for me.
Yeah, yeah.
I did get taught how to lace up my running shoes back in the day.
Yep.
To pull the toe back to the heel.
Yep.
So to speak. And
yep.
Yeah, it worked to a certain degree. The other question is, how long should you change until you change your orthotics?
It depends on the manufacturing, the actual material. So the devices that we make, for instance, they last up to about 10 years. We had a lady the other day who's up to 19 years with her original pair of orthotics.
I'll hold you there. The orthotics in my shoes at the moment are from 1998.
All right, you win. look, if they're... So, I mean, obviously, the technology's come a long way since then, so...
Yeah, it used to be a moulding of your foot and the
yep.
fiberglass make and,
yep.
and the leather on top.
Yep. So generally nowadays we don't do rigid orthotics. We know that they can be a bit harmful to the foot, so
right.
usually the softer, more flexible devices are better. But then it comes down to your symptoms. If your feet haven't changed that much, the orthotics are still good, then, you're not getting any pain. Stick with it.
I'm extremely flat-footed. I think I probably need an upgrade.
Yep. I'll touch on the other half of your problem. One of my mates has just undergone a precise nail leg lengthening procedure where basically his femur got chopped in half and two metal rods placed in, and it gets adjusted daily by a magnetic force to lengthen his leg.
I had the opportunity before I hit puberty to get
yep.
staples in my right shin to
yep.
stop it growing, to let my left leg grow up.
To catch up, yep.
Yeah, and I'm talking a 20 mil difference in
yes.
the leg length.
Yep.
And I just thought, no chance.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And now I've got a rise on my Authentics.
On your Authentics, yeah. So most shoes we can get up to about a centimetre correction in them, and then you've got to add to the shoe, depending on the shoe, obviously.
Yeah.
But, yeah, poor Scotty's going through quite some immense pain at the moment.
Yeah, I'm happy to just have a in thongs, people notice it. In shoes, people don't.
Yeah. And as long as you're relatively comfortable, then stick with it.
Thanks, Simon.
Look, cheers, thank you very much.
No worries, cheers, mate. Yes, thank you. We also wanted to have a bit of a chat. I'm with podiatrist Peter Lum, by the way. Is it better to walk around inside the house barefoot or wear shoes, says Stuart?
Oh, depends how expensive your floors are. I go barefoot at home.
Do you?
There you go. There's an answer.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah.
So. I mean, in there is a question from Stuart, and that is,
yep.
is at base level, are we better off barefoot?
Are we better off barefoot? Yeah, it's very true. We just don't know.
We don't know.
We just don't know.
Yeah.
We just don't know. In theory, we should be, because that's what we're designed.
Absolutely. We weren't born with shoes.
We weren't born true. But anybody that's got timber floors or tiles at home and they spend all day cooking barefooted, they're going to get sore feet and sore knees. So perhaps what's not right is what the environment we're living in, maybe.
Yeah.
But interesting, isn't it? We could sit here and philosophise all
it's
night.
It's kind of, it almost is a philosophical question.
I'll ask the orangutans in Sabah. What do you reckon?
Well, they don't protect their feet. They could make things for their feet, but they don't bother.
They don't bother, no. The whales wouldn't know in Cebu. Mm.
No. All right. Where are we? Oh, yes, Rob, there's plenty of heaps of people texting in saying those shoes that we're not going to mention again are ideal for working on roofs. We have mentioned that. Has evolution failed us, or is all this designed for level track and field? Maybe sport should be barefooted.
Yeah, I don't know. Let you know in 500 years. We'll see whether we're faster or slower.
We were going to have a quick chat about ingrown toenails too. Now, Alice has texted me saying I've got a terribly painful...
I had a run of these a couple of weeks ago.
Alice says, I've got a pincer ingrown toenail.
A pincer ingrown toenail.
It's keeping me awake at night. What can I do about it? Now, they're often very painful.
Extremely painful.
Can we do something?
Quote, unquote, a lady told me that her ingrown toenail was more painful than giving birth. Wow. Quote, unquote.
Wow.
I will not judge her on that.
What can you do about it?
Significantly painful things. So it was about 3 weeks ago. I must have had about
just describe 20. What they are, just for people.
So an ingrown toenail, you've got two varieties. You've got a nail similar to what's the lady's name? Texted in
Alice.
Similar to Alice, where the nail turns into like a pincer or very involuted, and it curves around and starts squashing the nail bed. Mm-hmm. And then the next stage is when you start playing around with it, or you traumatize it, and it gets infected.
Mm-hmm.
So those two scenarios. So if it's just the nail shape, then the best thing that we can do is just treat it regularly, you know, every 6 weeks, eight weeks.
Can't you just keep trimming it?
Yeah, we just trim it, but you got to trim it in a proper way so it doesn't keep curving and you don't leave sharp edges. Mm-hmm. So you need to get some advice on that or get it done regularly. Unfortunately, when they get infected, and particularly if people have played with it, not mentioning teenage boys or anything, but... they're quite adept at trying to pull out the ingrown part, and they pull out their nail bed with it. And unfortunately, that's the bit of skin that sits on top of the nail. Once that happens, you pretty much don't have a choice, but we have to do a little minor surgery on it. It's quick, it's easy, it's painless. But yeah, just see somebody before you get to that stage. The reason for the nighttime pain is you get, with an ingrown toenail, you get a pain called causalgia, where the very small nerve endings underneath the toenail get irritated by the by the ingrown toenail or the pressure from the nail. And then just the light touch, you know, you could squeeze your toe and it won't hurt, but you put the bed sheet on or a cotton bud on it and it's quite painful. It's causalgia, that's called.
Mm. Do you see many cases of ingrown toenails?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Okay, so it's common enough.
Very common. People, you go.
Yeah, so go on. So in short then, if you've got it, you should... Pay attention to it and go and get it treated.
Definitely. And it's easy to treat. The sooner we see it, the quicker we can get it. We can save surgeries. We can educate you on how to trim your own toenails. Because we've all got different shaped toenails. You know, same as we've all got different feet.
Well, as you get older, I think a lot of people find it quite hard to get down and
a lot of my clients get taller and can no longer reach their toenails, right?
Well, I think it is a problem when you get older that people can't reach the toenail, and not as easily, and certainly, you know, to get an angle on it to trim it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to tell stories, but, you know, there's no names, no pack drill. But I had a lady who had very poor eyesight, and she came and saw me and said, I've got this really hard toenail, and I tried trimming it with my clippers, which were a pair of pliers. Unfortunately, her circulation was that bad. She didn't realize she actually degloved her toe.
Oh.
And that hard bit of nail was her bone sticking out.
Oh, no.
So, yes, eyesight, inability to reach leads to a lot of problems. Not very pretty.
My texter says, hi, my son is 13 years old and runs marathons.
Ooh, good stuff.
What are your thoughts about his age and the demands of running?
No comment, because I was doing 140 kilometres a week at that age, so go for it. I fell out of love with it, so I gave up when I hit university and had to study and earn money. If it's done properly and it's done with the right coaches and he's good at looking after his body, then I don't have a problem with it.
It's not going to hurt him.
No.
No.
Okay. No. As long as he's in an environment where it's well looked after and his injuries are treated and he's good at stretching and looking after himself. Okay. Definitely.
Does cutting a V in the middle of your toenail help?
Oh, the good old wife's tale. No. It takes the apex of pressure off, so it feels better, but it doesn't change the ingrown toner.
Okay.
There you go. Straight up. That one. That one's an easy one. Don't ask me about barefoot running.
is running on soft sand for miles good foot therapy?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Absolutely. Flat sand. Obviously, some beaches have got a big tilt on it, and that gives you a artificial leg length difference, but yeah, absolutely.
Our bare feet are meant to walk on natural surfaces, dirt, sand, grass.
Yes.
My podiatrist reckons we should wear shoes on all other surfaces.
Yep. Oh, just like the orangutans. If they want to come to Sydney, we'll put shoes on them.
If the orangutans are coming around for dinner, they've got to wear shoes. Dear, where are we? Judy, hello.
How are you?
Hey, Judy.
Good. I've severed the extensor tendon in my big toe.
Yep.
I had surgery 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
And I'm wondering how long it'll be before I'll be able to walk any.
How did you sever your...
I knocked the carving knife off the kitchen bench.
Okay. So that's the tendon, for those out there in foot world, that's the tendon that pulls your big toe up.
Yes.
Chopped in half. Ouch.
Yep.
Okay.
Straight off.
Yep. All right. So what was your question? How long before...
I can walk any distance. It has a splint on it at the moment.
At the moment, yep. I'm assuming that surgery was done to reconnect it up.
Yes.
Yep. So we would treat that like any other soft tissue surgery that gets done. So you'd probably be immobilized maybe for, 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Yeah.
You're in a boot, yeah. And then after that, it'll be just a slow, gradual return. So, you know, after that period of time, the strength in the tissue is pretty close to what it was beforehand. It's just about reconditioning the muscle and the tendon. So, you know, whenever you don't use a tissue for 8 weeks, regardless of whether you've chopped it in half with a knife or not, you're going to get a lot of weakness. And so building that back up is probably going to take a couple of weeks. But, yeah, there's no reason that, you know, by the end of the year, you'll be back to where you were before just 2 weeks ago.
Just
take it nice and slowly and get in with a good physio or a good rehab center and they'll work it out for you.
Right. Could I swim with the splint on or not?
Depends if there's stitches in there.
They're out now.
You could, as long as it doesn't over, like, you know, when you're, you know, say for instance, when you're breaststroking, some of that flicking action can probably irritate it.
Right.
Definitely don't wear flippers for a little while. I don't know if you use flippers when you swim, but don't use flippers for a little while. But yeah, other than that, I don't see a problem with swimming.
Yeah. I was just wondering if I could go to the beach, like I'm heading up north soon.
My general advice, I mean, your surgeon would probably be more specific, but my general advice is if you're doing something and it feels like it's aggravating it, making it sorer, then back it off. But if it feels comfortable, then you're not going to do any harm. The surgeon's probably done a pretty good job repairing it. So,
okay.
And the other thing to remember, you've got other muscles, you've got other structures that also work to achieve that function. So it's not just that one tendon that you're going to be loading up when you go walking. So,
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Judy. Good luck with it.
Interesting injury. See them all.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It's never a boring day.
No, never. Anthony.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, mate.
Good. I just have bunions, and I'm actually a very athletic boy.
Yep.
I do AFL tennis and
yep.
swimming and professional high jumping.
Yep, cool.
I was wondering, is it, like, bad if, like, I do too much of it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because, in my school shoes, I have inserts.
Yep.
And my podiatrist said that just keep wearing them. But like when I put my foot down,
yes,
on the bunion bit,
yep,
it like every time I'm wearing bare feet like on concrete or something,
yep,
it just like starts this like intang sting.
Yep. Okay.
And so I was just wondering, is that, like, bad or is it just getting, like straighter or something?
Or something like that, yeah. So with your bunions, you've got little bones underneath that particular joint called sesamoid. So with your bunions, those joints start rubbing on parts that they shouldn't. So without, you know, being able to draw pictures and show you where it is. So when you've got an orthotic or when you've got shoes on, there's a certain amount of protection given to that area of the foot. So when you're barefooted, when you're on hard surfaces, there's a lot more insult onto an area that unfortunately isn't absorbing that amount of force like it would do in a normal normal functioning foot.
Oh, okay.
So my point would be to you is the more protection you can give to the joint, the better that you'll be from a pain point of view and better you'll be able to perform. So unfortunately, like your orthotics and school shoes are perfect. Not wearing orthotics in your performance shoes, like your high jump shoes and all your other sports shoes, is entirely a personal thing.
Mm.
But with your foot type, if your bunions are particularly bad, walking barefoot on hard surfaces is probably something I would say avoid as much as you can.
Okay.
You go. Yeah.
I also have a very wide foot.
Yep.
I can't wear like Nikes or anything because
yep.
they're very narrow. I
yep.
have to wear acids and I have to get that size in a very wide
fit. Yep. Yep. So
yeah.
that's an unfortunate consequence of having the bunions and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
How old are you, mate?
I'm 13.
13. Okay, cool. So
my mum has wide foot and
yep.
stuff, but actually the bunions isn't in the family. I'm like the first one that's got it.
So you're the genetic mishap.
Yeah.
And is it in both feet or just one?
Both feet.
Okay. All right. So there's a condition called juvenile HAV or hallux abductovalgus, which, you know, juvenile kids with bunions. Okay.
Okay.
And usually they do look quite nasty. Some are painful, some are not. And you will find surgeons are quite open to operating on them. They won't operate on them until you've stopped growing.
Mm.
Look, the surgeons see it every day. If you want to contact a surgeon, get some advice, get the lay of the land. Unfortunately, it is just one of those genetic mishaps that happen when we see it in kids such as yourself.
Yeah.
Surgeries nowadays are quite successful, and obviously they'd be operating on you at an age where the joint itself hasn't, you know, got arthritis and all that sort of stuff yet. So, you're a boy, probably wait till you're about 18 or 19 before your feet stop growing. So.
Yeah, my brothers had, as I was hearing other conversations, my
yep.
brothers had really bad ingrown toenails,
yep.
and my dad actually had to pick it away every week.
Oh,
good dad. Luck, Anthony.
Yeah.
Thanks, right. mate.
Yeah. Just do whatever you have to do to stay pain-free, okay?
Good on you.
Thank you.
Cheers,
thanks,
mate.
Thanks, Anthony.
Okay.
Bye. Thanks for the call, too. Linda's got hammer toes. Hello, Linda.
Well, I don't think I've got... Well, I may have one hammer toe, but I was listening to that other woman talk about her grandmother's bunions.
Yeah, yep.
My mother has got really bad hammer toes on one foot.
Yep.
And I've got the second toe on my left foot has now got quite an enlarged joint, and I'm thinking, oh, my God,
is it starting to change? Maybe
yes.
we should get Judy to come around with her chopping knife. Nah.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, we often look around us and see, oh, is that going to come to me and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, all my uncles are bald and I'm looking at them and I was there 20 years ago. So, look, we get clawed toes for all sorts of different reasons. You know, you might often we see them in high arches because of the way that the tendons work. Often we see them in flat feet because the foot's trying to hold onto the ground and all that sort of thing. So if the joint itself is inflamed without having too much deviation, then we can look at, you know, giving you some padding and all that sort of stuff to make sure that it's not going to give you any pain or grief. But if it's a joint that's just all of a sudden flared up and, you know, that it might just be an arthritic joint change happening in there or an inflammatory arthritis that...
Well, it's not actually sore.
Not sore, it's just bigger?
Well, it's just, I can't move it. It's just solid.
Oh, solid. Okay, so it's fused up on you.
Well, okay. So I can bend it one way, but I can't straighten it out properly.
Okay. Yeah, that's a hammertoe or a clortoe, depending on which joint's involved.
Sorry, Linda.
So what do I have to do about it?
I would get in and, well, there's not much you can do about it because nothing we can do can help it move, if that makes sense, if the joint's already starting to fuse. But we can build props and give you little gadgets to make sure that it doesn't get worse or get pressure. But
so doing exercises and trying to move it won't help then?
If the joint's already started to fuse, it might help minimally, but not a great deal.
Right.
If you've got a local podiatrist, jump in and show them, because we've got lots of tricks up our sleeve.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. All right. Good on you, Linda.
Cheers, Linda.
Abby's just texted. She wears Birkenstocks at work. Sorry about the brand names again, but
it's hard not to mention brand names.
No, it isn't. Just very, very briefly. What's the best shoes, casual shoes, to wear all day when you're standing on your feet? Because she's a hairdresser.
Oh yeah, it's very difficult. One of the hardest things you can do, worse than running marathons, is stand stationary on your feet.
Okay.
Anything with support, and I would suggest changing from day to day. So different heel heights, different shoes.
So mix your shoes up.
Mix your shoes up so your feet don't get used to the one position.
Mix it up, Abby. Good luck with it too. Gee, time has flown. Peter, it's always fun.
It's good fun. Go battle the cold now.
Terrific to have you in. Peter Lum, who's a podiatrist, and he'll be back in at some point too.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.